first of all, thank you very much. I the fact that you chose me, to listen to my speech, I'm very humbled by that. I don't know why you would choose me, but I see that some of you guys are here for my afternoon Seder share. I really don't understand what's wrong with you. But I figure you guys are sick of me, but I know why Josh is here, but everybody else. But you want to just get the door? Okay. The topic of this Yomian, as you've already started listening to downstairs, is Torah. Torah learning, and Rabbi Ilshin spoke about Gemara learning, and the topic that I'm going to speak about in the realm of Torah learning is what it does, the effect that Torah learning has on our lives, and why it's so important. Okay, so I'm going to start off with the Gemara. The Gemara Msachim, I think it's Daf Samach Ches Amid Aleph or Ayin Ches Amid Aleph, Amid Beis or Ayin Ches Amid Beis. I'm not 100% sure. But the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef says, Ilav Hayoyma, if it wasn't for this day, which day? The Gemara says, the day of Shavuos, Matan Torah, the day that the Torah was given. Ilav Hayoyim, if it wasn't for the day that the Torah was given, there would be many Yosefs in the Shuk. So remember, Rabbi Yosef is the one that said that. Rabbi Yosef is the one saying, if it wasn't for the day that the Torah was given, then there would be many Yosefs in the Shuk. So, simple understanding of this Gemara, according to Rashi, simple understanding is, if it wasn't for the Torah, I would be an ordinary Joe. I would be a regular guy. I'd be just a regular guy like everybody else in the marketplace, and it would be nothing special about me, and Torah makes me special. That's Pashup Shat. But there are many questions on the Pashup Shat, on the simple understanding of this Gemara, and that is, that why does the Gemara use the terminology that it does? There would be many Yosefs in the Shuk. Very strange. Just say, I would be Yosef Ragil. I would be a regular guy. I would be a regular Yosef. Why does it have to say there would be many Yosefs in the Shuk? So that's the Gemara. And that's the Pashup Shat, and that's the question on the Gemara. I don't want to go over time, because I know there are refreshments outside. Okay. Alrighty. We all know, maybe Josh will disagree with me, but we all know that we live in a crazy world. True? We live in a crazy world, whether you want to call technology the most amazing thing in the world, or whether you want to call certain things that are in the world today, the right to everything that you want to do is an amazing thing. But we all know that we live in a crazy world. That day after day, one day you have a guy shooting from a hotel, killing 59 people. Another day, a guy walking to a church, killing 26 people. Another day this, another day that. Every day in the world, we have another crazy thing that's happening. We know that when we go up to Shemayim after 120, the Gemara in Gittin says that when we go to Shemayim after 120, we're going to start seeing the things that were on the bottom are now on top, the things that are on top are now on the bottom. Everything's reversed. Everything's reversed. This world is upside down. And when we go up to the Olam HaEmes, to the truthful world up in Shemayim, we're going to see everything for what it really, really is. What's supposed to be on the bottom is supposed to be on the bottom. What's supposed to be on top is supposed to be on top. And the people that are big over here are going to be absolutely nothing over there. And the people that are nothing over here are going to be absolutely amazing and high, lofty positions up in Shemayim. And I'm going to prove to you, if you haven't, believed me yet, that the world is crazy. Okay? How am I going to prove it to you? I can prove this. All right? This is not just like, whatever. I'm going to prove it to you. All right? What is, if I had to ask you guys, what is the most widely read magazine publication in the entire world? What would you say?
Time?
Nope, not Time Magazine. Nope.
People?
What?
People?
People? Nope, not People.
New York Times?
No, not the New York Times.
National Geographic?
Nope, not National Geographic. No. Anybody else?
Wait, what was the question?
The most widely read publication in the entire world.
Time Magazine.
Not Time, what?
GQ?
What?
GQ?
Nope, not GQ.
Wall Street Journal?
Nope.
Forbes?
It's pretty amazing that nobody knows it.
Forbes?
All right, there's a small magazine, and it's called Reader's Digest. Okay, you guys ever hear of Reader's Digest? Okay, by the way, it is the most widely read magazine publication in the entire world. It's translated into like as many languages as there are in the world, and it's read all over the world, online, in print, all over the world. Okay, so you would think any article, so you would think two ways. First of all, anything that makes it into the Reader's Digest must be somewhat of a significant article. That's number one. Number two is that the effect that an article has in Reader's Digest is worldwide, is everywhere, is so far-reaching. So I'm going to read you an article that I read many years ago. I don't have the original, it got lost, but I used to have the original. But I'm going to read you an article that I read in Reader's Digest. I could not believe that I read this article in the most widely read publication in the entire world. Okay? The article is called The Healing Power of Gossip. The Healing Power. For those who don't know, the Hebrew word for gossip is Lashon Hara. Okay? All right. In this article, Frank McAndrew, who is a professor in Illinois, okay, at Knox College in Illinois, all right, in Illinois, okay, so we're not talking about some Joe Schmo, we're talking about a guy with a brain in his head. He's a professor in a college. And this is what he says. Gossip is a way to keep track of social status and to manage alliances. It helps us know who we are and how we fit in. Gossip provides a means of social comparison, a way for us to compare ourselves to others. That sense of belonging is key to sound emotional health. Okay, so let's put it into our terms. Lashon Hara is a healthy thing to do. It's key to emotional health, to sound emotional health. We realize our social statuses with Lashon Hara. Because whoever could survive it is higher than the other. That's what a professor in Illinois wrote in the most widely read publication in the entire world. I almost fell off my chair when I read this article. Why did I almost fall off my chair when I read this article? The reason why I almost fell off my chair is because you know, as from believing Jews, that Lashon Hara is usur. Even if it seems that it should be mutter, for whatever reason it is, you know how many rules there are in Lashon Hara for you? You need to be three people, this, and that, all the rules and everything in Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is usur. There are only very, very few times where it's mutter to say Lashon Hara. And then it's not called Lashon Hara. It's called Lashon Tov. And even if you don't say it, that's not good. Lashon Hara is usur. Doesn't matter if Lashon Hara I'm about to say, by the way, we said no phones, all phones off, okay? It doesn't make a difference if what the Lashon Hara I'm going to say is going to make me feel good today. I'm sick as a dog. I'm depressed. Oh, so if I say a little bit of Lashon Hara, that'll make me feel good. And so say it. Do it. Do what you got to do. You know, do what you got to do. No wife would ever say to a husband, oh, you've been depressed for the last week. Well, go find somebody else for a week and whatever. Do what you got to do. If that makes you feel better, nobody would ever say that. That's ludicrous. What we are Torah learning Jews. We are God-fearing Jews. And when the Torah says something is usur, it doesn't make a difference if it helps us in our status in social standings. It doesn't make a difference if the speaking of Lashon Hara will help us in our sound emotional health. It doesn't matter. Lashon Hara is Lashon Hara, and Lashon Hara is usur. So it goes ahead, and Frank McAndrew, who, by the way, would write this article and preach it from today till tomorrow until he hears someone talking Lashon Hara about him. Until he hears someone saying gossip about him. There was a song when I was growing up. I think it's a Destiny song. You know, and it was about somebody, the Yenta, who's always like talking, always talking. She's always, you know, talking and talking and talking and listening in. And she was always saying Lashon Hara to this person, that person, Rechilas and Lashon Hara, back and forth and here and there. Until one day she walked into shul and she heard people talking about her. And then suddenly everything changed. Suddenly, how dare them talk Lashon Hara about me? Because suddenly when things are reversed, suddenly it's not so emotionally healthy, and suddenly it's not such a good thing for your social status, and suddenly it's not such a good thing overall. So Frank McAndrew could preach us from today till tomorrow until he hears someone speaking gossip about him. And then what will happen? He'll write a new article, how gossip is damaging. Until he gets over the fact that people spoke gossip about him, and then what? He'll rewrite this article. So it goes from one idea to the other, from one mood to the other, from one day to the other, depending what the way I feel, depending what I do. I read in a sefer by Rav Shimshon Pinkus, and we live in certain societies where it may seem very proper, may seem very refined, but at the end of the day, even people who are refined and proper and all these things are really nothing. You know, just I wasn't planning on saying this. Yesterday, there's a website called the Yeshiva World News. This is where the frum people get their news. Okay, all right. There's no pre-tzedakah stuff all over the internet over there. They have ads, but they're of male politicians. they do have pictures of women on there, which is what I'm about to say. They had the top picture. Okay, it was a picture of the Gadol Adar, which you don't find in the New York Times, right? The Gadol Adar of Steinman, who was just let out of the hospital, Baruch Hashem, after 103 years old and no medication for all his life, right? So he was just let out of the hospital, Baruch Hashem, in better health than he was last week. And right under him is a picture of somebody who I could not believe. They put the two of them right next to each other. The person who right now in the world is being accused of rigging the Democratic, convention. They have Hillary Clinton right under Lahavdil Avis Abdullah, the Gadol Hadar for Steinman. You have like the man of Emes, who probably never said a word of Sheker in his life, and then you have somebody who maybe one time said a word of truth, right next to each other. It was like, it was amazing just to see like the contrast. It was hilarious. It was really, really funny. Anyways, but so sometimes you live in what seems to be like, everyone's proper, everyone's refined, people talk nicely to each other, and then, on the side they do all these other things. I'm going to tell you something I read in Rav Shimshon Pinkus's book. This is amazing. He says, he also starts talking about how the world that we live in is crazy. In 1942, okay, again, I understand we're talking about Holocaust times, but you have to understand the German people were as refined got. They were polite. They were in order. Everything was, was kaseder. Everything was written down. Every single thing that they did was, they killed systematically. Nothing was hefker. Nothing was just like, oh, just kill these people and leave them. No, everything had to go here and there and what, everything. So in the camps, so they really had this under commando who, they were Jewish people, Jewish prisoners who were, their job was to put the bodies into the ovens. That was their job. But at the end of the war, when they killed out the Sonder Commando, so I just read in a book recently, the last few weeks of the war, it was the SS soldiers that were doing it. It was the officers that were doing it themselves. And someone overheard them while they were doing it. And they had one guy, now you had two guys lifting up bodies off the floor. Passing it to who? Passing it to the guy, the two people who were right by the ovens. And those two people would throw the body into the oven, wait a few minutes, take them out, and the rest of the process. But it didn't go like that. It went slightly different. It went like this. I'm not going to speak German. I'm going to speak English, all right? Just because you don't know German. Can you please pass the next body? Sure. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And they put the body in, took it out, passed it on to the next one. Thank you very much. Can you please pass the next body? Thank you. Does that sound weird? Does that sound weird to anybody here? What I just said, the difference between the first way? Thank you. Please. You're welcome. Does that make any sense? Can you please pass me the body you just gassed? Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah. You're welcome. Does that make any sense to you? We're talking about refined people. They're saying, thank you. Please. You're welcome. They're passing bodies that they just gassed to each other. Does that make sense to you? That doesn't make sense to me. You know why? Because when you, obviously, it doesn't make sense to anybody here, but do you know why people like this do this? Because they have their way of thinking, and their way of thinking works for them that day, and they're very proper people. So if I gas a person, then what do you do? That's his problem, not my problem. I'm still going to say please. I'm still going to say thank you. I'm still going to say you're welcome. That's my moral conduct. That's my moral conduct. There's a sefer called Shailos and Tshuvos Mimamakim, Responsa from the Holocaust. If anybody could get their hands on it, okay, they have it in Hebrew, they have it in English. If anybody can get their hands on it, it is a living Kiddush Hashem. It was written by a man by the name of Ephraim Ushri, Zechet Tzadik Lavracha, Kaddish Lavracha, who his job during the war was to oversee the things that were being brought for the museum of the extinct race of the Jewish people. Okay, that was his job. So they would bring Sfarim to him. So he had access to tons of Sfarim. He was a big Rav. And people would ask him Shailas during the war. You should see the Shailas that people asked him during the war. Nowadays, we're not sure if you make a bracha. Okay, whatever, you make a bracha. So whoop-de-doo, so is a bracha batala, who cares, you know? We make the bracha, or we don't make a bracha. All right, or we do this halacha, or we don't do this halacha. I include myself in this too. How many times do we have a suffix in halacha in front of us, and we just, okay, whatever, you know, whatever. God doesn't care, I don't care, he doesn't care, my neighbor doesn't care, my roommate doesn't care, the rebbe doesn't care, no one's looking, we're good, eat it, shalom, so I have to play D1 ball right now. You know, that's the way it goes. I'm sorry. Sorry. Water polo. Alright. That's the way it goes. This sefer is all about people asking shailas in the worst possible time in their lives. You know, the saying of you got off on the wrong, you know, you got out of the wrong side of the bed in the morning. You know, so you wake up and guys ask me, like, oh, Rabbi, you're not so, like, lively today. I'm like, yeah, I know, I got off the wrong side of the bed this morning, you know. You know, in the Holocaust, they got off the wrong side of the bed every morning. You know that no matter what side they got off of, if they were able to get off of it because there were people there, it was the wrong side of the bed. You wear that? And still they were asking these questions? You should see the questions they were asking. And Rav Ushri compiled all these questions. And he put it in a canister, saved it for after the war, and then he put out the Shailos and Tshuvos Sefer. And you see what the difference between a world that has gone insane and people who kept doing what they were doing before the war. They went for Shailos before the war, they were going for Shailos during the war, they went for Shailos after the war. Halacha is halacha is halacha. You know, there's a story that I have in my house, in my family, my father told me and my kids, that my great grandfather was on the board of his shul, and you're talking about a shul in America in the 50s or 60s, and it wasn't very very religious, but like people were very committed back then, you know, even if it wasn't a lot of people in the shul, and they had a board meeting once, and they were talking about something with the mechitza, and the rabbi wanted this and this, and he kept saying the halacha is that the mechitza needs to be a certain height and a certain length and it has to be a certain thing, you can't just see through. And everybody in the room starts going crazy. No, we're going to make it lower. And then my great-grandfather told my father, sorry, he says, there was this guy, you know, like Mr. Epstein, you know, and he gets up and he says, I don't understand you people. If the rabbi said that's the halakha, then that's the halakha. And that's what it is. If that's the halacha, then that's the halacha. It doesn't make a difference if 6 million of our brothers are being murdered outside. The halacha is still the halacha. Shulchan Aruch is still Shulchan Aruch. If I'm able to do it, I have to do it. If I'm not able to do it, I'm an oinus. But if I'm able to do it, then I gotta do it. Rain, snow, sun, doesn't make a difference. Right side of the bed, wrong side of the bed, every side of the bed, it makes no difference whatsoever. These people were God-fearing Jews before the war, they were God-fearing Jews during the war, and many, many of them were God-fearing Jews after the war. Many of them. I'm going to read you an article right now, okay, that I read many, many years ago, after the number 2 bus bombing, you guys are probably too young to remember the number 2 bus bombing. I remember it very well, for two reasons. Besides for being a bus bombing in Yerushalayim, I remember it for two reasons. First of all, it was 2 days before Elul, Rosh Chodesh Elul. And there were many people that were going to the Kotel, to Davin, for Rosh Chodesh Elul, leading up to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. And the bus was, a double, like one of those, accordion buses, and it was jam-packed. I remember it twofold. The first reason is because I had kicked I got into a fight with my sister-in-law. And I kicked her out of the house. All right, not literally kicked her out of the house. I just told her I was very, really upset at her, and I told her to get out of house, so she was really upset at me. So she decided to calm down and go to the Kotel. Okay, she said, whatever. She went to the Kotel, and she happened to have been on the number 2 bus bombing. On the number 2 bus, sorry. The number 2 bus before this number 2 bus. Okay, so, because when we heard about the explosion, we were like, oh no. You know, especially me, my heart was like, okay, you know. The second reason why why it sticks out very, very clearly in my mind is because my smicha Rebbe at the time, Rabbi Schwartz, his wife was killed on the bus bomb, in the bus. And many reporters, I remember going to be Menachem Avil, right, about 5 minutes from my house. They went to be Menachem Avil. And I remember walking into my Rebbe's house, and I was just in shock of my Rebbe sitting there with all his kids, and there was no, anger. There was no, ferociousness. You know, the government, the Arabs, which I'm going to read about in the article. None of that. Because Baruch Hu has a plan. We don't know the plan. Who are we to ask questions? I'm going to start questioning the Rebbeinu Shlalom. I'm going to question him. So I'm going to read you this article. But first, I want to very quickly tell you another story. I was in America over the summer, and I sat down with my grandmother. She'll live and be well. She's in Tinshtarik. She's 95 years old. According to her, she's 94, but we know she's 95. And for the first time, anybody ever sat down and spoke about the experiences of the war. I had been to Poland a year ago, to Tarachago, and it's the first time I had a chance to sit down with my grandmother to talk to her about the war. She was saved in Auschwitz. She was only there for a few days, and then she was shipped to a different concentration camp. So I asked her about her experiences. And then I asked her a question, and I said to her, I think when I had told this to my shir, I said, Grandma, tell me, there were so many people that went off the derech after the Holocaust. They forgot about God. They were angry at God. So many people. How were you? You lost your father in the war. You lost so much in the war. How were you able to walk out of the Holocaust and every single one of your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, every single one of them is Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. How are you able to do that? She looked him in the eye and she said, I'll never forget this. She said, and what? Be angry at the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? And then what? Then I'll have nothing. So they were angry at the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and now they have nothing. They don't have their families, and now they don't have the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. They have nothing. But me, be angry at the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and then I'll mamash have nothing. Because I have the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, I have children, I have grandchildren, I have great-grandchildren, all Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. Every single one of them. I just sat there like, wow, you are going straight to Gan Eden. Straight to Gan Eden. Listen to this article. Okay? I know it's that time of the day where people get tired and go to sleep. I try to stay awake for this. The article was written in the Israeli newspaper, the Ma'ariv, after the number 2 bus bombing on Shmuel Hanavi Street in Jerusalem in 2003. It was 14 years ago. On Channel 2's news magazine Friday night, Shelly Yakimovich, who's now like in the Knesset, spoke very wisely about our attitude toward the ultra-Orthodox and of their strength in times of distress. Okay, listen good, okay? I've been thinking about this since the day the bus exploded. 2 more minutes. Can I have 3? Since the day the bus exploded in Jerusalem, the bus was packed with religious people. Most of the casualties, the dead and the wounded, some of them critically, were religious people or their children. If this type of tragedy had happened to secular Israelis, their cries of grief would have immediately sought out the guilty parties, the government, the bus company, the lack of security guards, and of course the usual cries of death to the Arabs, and the terrible and unjustified anger against the human agent that brought the tragedy down upon them. But the religious do not hold anyone to blame. With a sort of nobility devoid of pathos, they live in a world that lies outside of history. What is true in our world is not real truth for them. They live in a world in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the Jewish people, and whatever befalls a person is God's handiwork. God instructed His chosen people to fulfill His commandments and to do what is good in His eyes. God does not need to explain what this good is. The religious do not believe that calamities occur at random. God runs this world and He knows what He's doing. His knowledge is not the same as human knowledge, and a believer ascribes himself to God and lives within the Torah. When I saw how they stood and prayed over their own blood with terrible grief and restrained horror, begging God to forgive them, I could only be envious that my forefathers were like them. We have no God in heaven. We cannot conceive of life as a narrow bridge. We have a reality which trademarks our reality within a reality. We are Israel, and we are also Sony televisions. This is the day before internet. We are cars. We are the cars we drive. We are the general human culture that we are a part of, and that is a part of us. The religious are not involved in this. They are not interested in Bach, Beethoven, or the question of how much a pair of Reeboks cost. When tragedy hits them, they seek to understand within their hearts, through prayer, what evil might have been committed by those who have never sinned. I never believed that at the age of 73 I would write an article praising the religious. But the moments after the tragedy in Jerusalem made me realize something I had not fully appreciated. And it would not hurt us to try to understand the nature of their elegant and pained stance at a time when the soul cries out for vengeance. I always focus on this last line. It wouldn't hurt us to try to understand the nature. The nature. Why was my Rebbe like that? Why was he able to be able to survive something like this? How is that possible? Let's go back to the Gemara that we asked at the beginning of this and finish off with this. The Gemara said, Rabbi Yosef, I'm Rabbi Yosef, if it wasn't for the day that the Torah was given, if it wasn't for the Torah, there would be many Yosefs in the shuk. You know what that Gemara means? If it wasn't for Torah, one day I would be this type of Yosef. But the next day, if I got out of the wrong side of the bed, I would be that type of Yosef. One day I'll make brachas for the Kavana, the next day, One day this is mutter, the next day it's asr. There would be many Yosefs in the shuk. Every day would be a different Yosef. There's no set thing. There's no anchor in a person's life. Anything goes. A boat could go this way or that way if you don't put down the anchor. But what does Torah have the power to do if we let it? If we let it, it anchors us. It allows us to be anchored. It allows us to be anchored. And that is why Torah is so important. You can go ahead and go through your whole year. And you can go through your experiences of your year and have a good time and do all the things that we're doing. And you could even sit and learn Torah and not let it have the anchor effect on you. But if you realize that what Torah is doing subconsciously is anchoring your lives and making you the person that you are supposed to be, not the person that maybe I'll be like this on Sunday and this on Monday and that on Tuesday and that on Wednesday. Shabbos, I'm a completely different person. And Saturday night, I'm a totally different person, similar to Thursday night. But everybody could be, if they let the Torah anchor them, could be one person. Not a person who's going to lie and cheat to the entire world one day and stand and say, oh, I'm an honest person the next day. You could be a constant, consistent person. Not to say that there aren't Torah learners out there that are crooked people, that are liars. Not to say that there aren't any people like that out there. Of course there are. But I wouldn't say that they're learning. I definitely would say that those people are definitely not learning Torah properly. That's for sure. If you realize the power that Torah could have on you, then even in times of tragedy, you won't budge. You won't budge. You are going to be who you are going to be. You know why? Because you are a Torah Jew, and a Torah Jew does this. When you go on vacation, you still hold to the standards that you hold to. Just because I'm on vacation doesn't mean, oh, I don't have to eat that hasher. Oh, now I can look at women. Oh, now this. Oh, now that. No! You're a Torah Jew, and Torah Jew has halacha. I give you all a bracha that we should be zocha to learn Torah this year and make it an anchor in our lives. Let it be something that makes you a consistent person, a real person, not a shaky person, one day this and one day that. Have a great day, guys.